Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, December 27th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. And Sierra will be back with us next week. We hope you're having a peaceful and joyful holiday season. Tonight, we welcome James Olson, author of The Whole Brain Path to Peace. In this acclaimed book, James explores how distortions and even destructive polarizations can occur in politics, culture, and our relationships when one brain hemisphere is dominated by the other. But what if our goal is to gain the cooperation of others and live in peace? The answer, as Mr. Olson shows in his book, is that each of us must learn to consciously integrate the contrasting views of the world provided by each brain hemisphere. Since one of the primary Starseed missions is bringing unity consciousness to the planet, The Whole Brain Path to Peace is a keystone work in understanding how to accomplish this. Please check out his website at thewholebrainpath.com. And we will introduce James and Lavendar in just a few minutes. We want to thank Purple Sage and Tammy for hosting the chat room and switchboard this evening. Purple Sage will forward your questions to us if you can't call. And if you can call, our number is 917-889-8292. Then press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. If you haven't yet, please click follow on our show page to help promote our show, and you'll also be notified of our upcoming topics immediately. And if you like the show, remember to tell a friend. We're well over the 71,000 listens mark, so thanks to all of you for tuning in each week and helping spread the word. On our main site, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started with Lavendar and James Olson in just a minute, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. Don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar.
Oh, hello, Arielle, and to all of our listeners. I'm very, very pleased to have James Olson bring forth his information about the right and left brain. So do you have him on?
We sure do.
Okay, bring him on.
Hello, James. You're on the air.
Yes, well, thank you, Arielle and Lavendar, for having me. I'm just delighted to be heard by such an august audience, light workers, star seeds, and such. You know, I'm speechless for the moment.
Okay, great. Well, let's start out by saying, what inspired you to start writing about perspective, perception, and the brain hemispheres? Give us a little background on how all this started.
I was writing a book, and I went to a workshop one weekend in which the brains of the participants were mapped by asking a series of questions, and when he finished evaluating our information, he placed us in a U-shaped line, on a continuum from the left brain people on the left and the right brain people on the right. And I thought I was fairly balanced, but I found myself out near the end of the left brain line. And I wanted to know what that meant to me in terms of how I was processing information. How was that distorting my view of reality? And that really got me started. I'd always heard that the most important thing that you can know is to know yourself. And it just seemed to me that the most important thing about myself that I could know would be how my brain was impacting the information that was flowing to my consciousness. So that got me started. That's brought me here to this book.
Okay, great. Well, people might not see perspective as especially glamorous subject, and what makes the subject of perspective important enough that people should spend their valuable time looking into it?
Well, our first and most fundamental act of creation is the integration of the two radically different streams of information flowing to consciousness through the two hemispheres. You know, what we see, what our perception becomes, how we process this information. It's just like each of us listening to this, we're in a different place, and we're looking at physically, we're looking at different things. We see different parts of the world, and the same thing can happen in the world of mind. We can have different perspectives according to what we've learned, and then we process that. And so perspective is fairly simple. Perspective is what we observe or what we feel, maybe what we smell. These things give us perspective, and then we process that, and we create meaning from that. What do these smells and sights mean to my life? And so perception is very complex. It involves a lot of different factors, but perspective is fairly simple. You and I could, if we were in the same room, we could have a very similar, almost identical perspective, but still we might have slightly different perceptions. So that's basically the answer. Perspective is a factor of where we are, and perception is a matter of how we process the information we have.
I noticed in your book, and I read it in front of the fireplace over the holidays, and I noticed that you had a lot to say about helping men better understand women. How do you do that?
Well, men are directed by their left brain. There are exceptions, but this is the rule. And likewise, most women are directed by their right brain. Of course, we all use both brains, so our perspective always reflects some combination of the two brains. But there's still a major difference between the way men and women see the world, because the men tend to use their left brain, and it's a very different brain. It's focused. It's analytical, which means it's separatist, and women are pretty much the opposite in that women tend to rely on a synthetic right brain, synthetic meaning unifying, and it's the big picture brain. So women tend to have the big picture, men tend to be focused. Women tend to be cooperative, men tend to be competitive. And so in order to understand women, for example, men need to understand this, what the right brain does, what it sees, and how it responds to information. And this is a matter of perspective, and it's something we can learn. Now, women are going to process this different, so you know, every woman may process it different, and women are still going to be difficult to understand for men, but it gives them a big head start if they can understand what the right brain sees and how it processes information. And it's pretty much the same the other way around, except that women tend to understand men a lot better than men understand women. And this is there are two major factors that I see that causes this. One is that our culture is left brain dominant. Men have set up the culture, all the institutions, based on the way they see reality, which is through the left brain. And so when they want to teach you how to do something, they teach you the left brain way of doing it. So women are educated to be left brain, and men are not educated to be right brain. So that's basically why.
You know, it makes me think of that book, Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The author of that book used to live in this house that I'm in right now.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah.
What is the connection between the brain and our choice of war or peace?
Well, the right brain is the peace brain. It's the universe brain. It's the brain of harmony. The two brains are always complementary. And so the right brain, whereas the right brain is the peace brain, the left brain is the war brain. And the reason for this is the left brain is the brain that takes care of us. It's our earth brain. It's our security brain. It protects the body. It protects our families. It's really physically oriented. And to do that, sometimes you have to fight. And so that's the left brain's function, is to fight for us. And the right brain is the, being the universe brain, is the it's the God brain. The Native Americans have said this, have known this for a long time. The right brain is our God brain, and so it's the peaceful brain. So in order to, you know, the kick, so that, well, that is then, that's the connection between the right brain and peace.
What are some of the other distinctions between the way the left and the right brain hemispheres see and respond to our environment?
Well, one of the, I wanted to point out that the left brain is dualistic and it's polar. It divides things up into two parts. That's what dualistic means. Dual meaning polar, or meaning two. And the right brain sees things as one, sees the oneness of the universe. It sees the context. So the left brain is polar and the right brain is nonpolar. And it just happens that molecules also come in this category. Molecules are either polar or nonpolar, and polar molecules are water molecules and things that dissolve into water, and nonpolar molecules are oil and things that dissolve into oil. So trying to what we really want to do is integrate the two brains, of course, but with us having a polar brain and a nonpolar brain, it's a little like trying to mix oil and water. They don't always mix. I mean, you can do it. Just shake it real good. You just know how to do it. But it's not that easy. And it's kind of that way with trying to integrate our brains here on in our mind, in that one is polar and one's nonpolar. Another characteristic of the left brain is that it's individual-oriented. The right brain, in contrast, is collective-oriented, which makes sense since it sees the big picture. The left brain looks into things, being analytical, and it views interiors. The right brain sees the exteriors of wholeness. The left brain is limited. The right brain is unlimited. And the right brain sees specific things in looking at the details. And, of course, it sees generalities in that it sees the big picture. So that's kind of a a general understanding. I guess that answered the question.
Okay. If the two hemispheres are so different in their function, how can we ever hope to integrate the two?
Well, they are complementary. So they're intended to fit together. In fact, the holistic right brain is, to be holistic, has to include the left brain. So if you're right brain, you're more likely to see everything. But if you're left brain, when you're left brain dominant, that's when you get into trouble, because you're separatist and you don't see you don't necessarily see the big picture. It depends on how strong your right brain is, but you tend to be separatist, and so you and you're competitive, and so you tend to compare the two brains. And so conservatives, for example, the left brain is conservative. I didn't mention that, and the right brain is liberal. And conservatives, being left brain dominant, tend to see a competition between right brain ideas and left brain ideas. That's the way they're built. Right brain people, in seeing that they're complementary, understand that left brain peoples have valid points and try to absorb them. So that's basically it. Does that make sense?
Noticed that you mentioned Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals. Are you inclined to support the principles of self-determination and support individual rights, like the Republicans, yet they pass laws to take away individual rights regarding such issues as sexual orientation, abortion, prohibition of marijuana, terminus illness options? Isn't this a contradiction of the Republicans?
Well, yes, it is. But conservatives aren't always conservative, because they have this right brain influence. And in the same way, liberals aren't always liberal, because they're subject to the strength of a strong left brain. So, for example, even though Democrats, who tend to be the more liberal of the two parties, even though they know better than to solve problems with war, they've been led into the drug war, for example, believing that they're doing the right thing. They've been bombarded with fear of what will happen if certain drugs are legalized, and so they accept that. They buy into that fear, and so both parties, both sides, liberals and Republicans, both stray away from their fundamental viewpoints. And so that's why we have these contradictions, seeming contradictions. It just reflects the great variety and diversity of humanity.
I noticed the subtitle of your book, The Role of Left and Right Brain Dominance in the Polarization and Reunification of America, suggests that you have some solution to the polarizations dividing this country. Could you tell us a little bit more about what you think the solution should be?
Well, first of all, we have to understand the problem. And the problem is that we have a left brain dominant culture. There are more left brain people holding the levers of power than there are right brain people. So it's slightly unbalanced. And we need to understand that the left brain is the polar brain, it's the dualistic brain, and it splits things up, and it creates divides, it's separative, and so it naturally, as a culture, we tend to be divided up, and it seems to me that we are getting more and more divided, and I think that's the way it has to be, because there's a sort of a wave motion back and forth in culture, where we become more, we go to excess and then we pull back and we go to excess, and that's just a natural motion. You see it in sound and in everything else. We have this wave motion, so it goes back and forth, and I don't know when it's going to end, but I'm hoping it's going to end soon. And the way to end this polarization, in my opinion, is to understand what's going on, to understand that we have let the left brain have a bit too much power. It needs to work. It's valuable, and we need the left brain, but it needs to work in the context of a right brain. And so the two sides need to work together. And to do this, we really need to educate left brain people, help them to understand the right brain, because people tend to fear what they don't understand. And people do not understand the right brain. They don't understand its strengths, so they don't really know how to take care of it. And they don't. And I think they don't. They see liberals as competitors, and in a sense, and liberals really don't want to be competitors. They are, but that's why liberals don't fight. That's why they often lose, because liberals don't fight, don't stand up for what they need. And so we just need to have people understand that the problem lies in the brain, the way we're using it, that we're over-relying on one side of our brain, and we need to understand and respect and use both sides of the brain. And to me, that is the solution to this polarization, and it can happen fairly quick once the word gets out, but it has to get out.
You write about media bias. Could you explain what you found out about the bias in the media to our listeners?
Yes. It's true that, in my opinion, that liberal views get more time and more print, but I'll explain why that is. This is no conspiracy. It's just part of a natural process of human growth. In seeking to understand their understanding of events, reporters are engaged in a holistic activity as they come up through the various news organizations, regardless of their values or the values of their employees, their employers. They are exposed to a wide variety of people, perspectives, and perceptions. And this has the inevitable effect of broadening and deepening their personal perspectives and perceptions. And this makes them more complete. They have a more complete view of the world. They have a more complete understanding. And this is more holistic. I mean, it just makes sense. The holistic meaning whole. They're not whole, but they're holistic. They're on their way there. And that's true whatever political convictions they might have started with. And, you know, if you start ultra-conservative, it may take you a whole life to get to be liberal. But that's the process. And as I mentioned before, there is a kind of a wave-based foundation of reality, and individuals and cultures do swing back and forth. So individuals and cultures may grow more conservative at times. But nevertheless, as a whole, when you look at movement through time, over large periods of time, it's experientially expansive. And that means that it's tending to be progressive or liberal in its direction. So that's why, and you see the same thing in Hollywood. That's why Hollywood is so liberal. You have all these actors out there, and they're playing all of these roles, and they're getting to see all of these magnificent perspectives and feeling what these people feel you just can't help but become more holistic.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot after reading your book about the way people process information and through the years, the way we've been taught to think about religion and the brain dominance of religion and our perspective about religion. And I know that you were raised here in Oklahoma like me, and you were very involved in the church, and because you've been on a quest about religion for a very long time. But give us a little bit more perspective about what you found out about how people relate to religion.
Well, the main thing that I found out that really explains what's going on is that our religions are directed almost entirely by men. And how do men see the world? They see it as they see a separative world. The left brain takes things apart. It sees us as individuals. And what does religion seek to do? It seeks to bring us together. So, the left brain, the brain that is, again, that is dominant in most men, seeks to solve problems through force. It reaches out. It's electric. The left brain is electric. It reaches out and makes things happen. And people don't like to be told what to do. They don't like to say they can't worship their religion. And so they rebel, and fights get started, and that's the way the left brain solves problems. Now I know that our clergy go to schools, and these schools try to help them be more holistic. But these schools have been set up by men, and they're guided by holy books that, in most part, have been channeled through men, and it just makes sense that the religions are fighting, because that's what men do. We have more men in prisons. We have a lot more men in prison because men are fighters. And so that it all filters down into our religion, just as it filters down into government or sports or anything else. And so, you know, that's why our religions are at war.
You know, this is a good place to announce this. There's going to be a mini series on DirecTV. It's on the Reel channel, RELZ. On New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, a miniseries called Pope Joan. And this is a true story about a woman who became Pope in Rome and how she was killed and then how they decided to erase the history of her ever being there. So it's going to be on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. If you're on cable or Dish or Direct, just try to find it. In the afternoon, it's going to be on around 3 o'clock here in Oklahoma, and it's part one, part two. And for those of you that knew that I carried this screenplay for several years trying to get it funded, and of course it didn't happen, someone actually did it. I'm anxious to see what screenplay actually made it to the screen. So I just wanted to announce that at the portion of this religious discussion. So, okay, tell us a little bit more about the drug war and what you found out about nicotine and coffee and marijuana and all the things that you researched. I thought that was a very interesting chapter.
Well, I found out that that caffeine and marijuana, based on scientific research by the National Institute of Drug Abuse and a private researcher, the two experiments were carried out at about the same time, and they came up with almost identical conclusions, and that was that there was very little difference in terms of the problems that the two drugs, caffeine and marijuana, caused. The government study showed that marijuana was slightly more of a problem than caffeine. The private research showed that it was marijuana was slightly less of a problem than caffeine, but they were very similar, and they're much less dangerous than, much less of a problem than alcohol or tobacco, for example. And the reason why this happens to be, well, I mean, so the drug war, the people in the drug war are ignoring science, and they want to ignore science. They need to ignore science, because if people really looked at the science, laws would change, and they would change rapidly. And when you look into the situation, there seems to be a really good answer as to why we have this particular discrepancy, why marijuana is categorized as a Category 1 drug, which is basically a drug that's dangerous and has no redeeming value. It's really categorized in the most oppressive category, and it's much less dangerous than other drugs. And the reason seems to be that in the mid-1930s, inventors had finally perfected or nearly perfected hemp processing machinery. This would have allowed farmers all over the nation to plant large crops of hemp and harvest them for the fiber and for other qualities they have. I could go into them, but I don't want to get off track here. This would allow farmers to plant large acreages of hemp. And since hemp was a good substitute for paper, for example, it has been used to make United States currency. This prospect of hemp being widely available and grown in vast quantities was a direct threat to the newspapers, who had large timber holdings to feed their newsprint, to make the newsprint. And so they actually stood to lose billions of dollars, even back then, in that currency. And so this was a great threat. And, of course, they had a great mouthpiece. They could say whatever they wanted to. And at the same time, the plastics industry had developed new products, and they were excited about these. And hemp has qualities that can substitute for plastic. It's a very strong and durable product. And so this also threatened DuPont and some other chemical producers, again, with massive losses. And so they worked together and got Congress to overturn people's right to use marijuana. This is a product that had been used around the world as medicine, and was at that time in use in the United States as medicine. And the Congress was actually lied to by these companies that were trying to overturn, trying to suppress hemp, and they got them to criminalize it. They came up with excuses that made people afraid, and they got it run through. And ever since, that's been the way it is. and they can't allow a good discussion of the subject. We've never had one in this country, even though we spend billions of dollars and put millions of our people in jails and prisons, but they just can't own up to the science. They can't own up to what happened back there when the laws were changed. And so it's a slow and difficult process getting the word out, but it's happening.
You know, what occurred to me as you were talking is that maybe they're really afraid that if people smoked marijuana, the left-brained people were afraid that they'll become more right brain if they smoke marijuana, so therefore they just want to hold on to their left brain. I don't know, it just kind of came to me that way.
Well, I've had that same thought.
It's like, oh, if they could just see the right brain through this little frequency of smoke, maybe they would want to stop having war, you know? So I see what time it is, and we're probably going to have a short program tonight. And so I'm going to ask Arielle to come back on, and she's going to go to the chat room and to the switchboard, and we'll see if we have any listeners that have questions for you. I'll come back to you in a little bit, James.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, this is Arielle, and before I do that, I just had the thought, James, that, and I guess, being, I guess, female and maybe more right-brained, that because this is an out-of-balance situation, it has been out of balance for a long time, and I believe that the nature of the universe is balance, and things that are out of balance cannot endure indefinitely. So just in the fact that it is out of balance is not that it's just going to kind of implode on itself, and the universal nature of balance will reassert itself as it is now, I think, in bringing a much more what we call the goddess energy, which is, you know, all the feminine qualities are embodied in right-brained perspectives. So, I mean, isn't the fact that it's out of balance mandating that it has to come back into balance?
I think that must be. yes, I mean it's it is coming back into balance. I mean, we may be getting a little more polarized in certain aspects, but I know that there are lots of wonderful light workers out there that are seeking to express the divine feminine, and you know, I'm glad you brought up that term. I tend to sometimes overlook that usage because a lot of men don't want to be, are afraid of becoming more feminine, and so if I talk about trying to bring us into a more feminine perspective, that turns off some males, and they are the ones that most need the message. So,
right.
But that's true. I mean, that's absolutely true. When something's out of, when you think of your washing machine, when the tub is out of balance, it shakes violently, and that may be what happens. That may be what Mother Earth has to do, is to shake violently, and you know. And maybe that helps balance. You know, I don't want to speak for Mother Earth, but it certainly looks that way.
And before, we are going to be going to the chat room here in just a moment, so Purple Sage, heads up. Bring it down into a very, very personal level in our personal relationships, because I know that from the work that I do with people in our readings and things, a lot of times the wife or the female partner is, you know, growing and exploring and coming into this goddess energy, and you know, the lights are going on, and the husbands are in various stages of agreement to totally not getting it. How can a person, especially I say a female who is coming into her own in understanding the divine feminine, how can you bridge that gap? Is there a way for what advice would you give to those women who where their men are still way out on the left somewhere to help find some middle ground?
Well, the simple answer is education. They need to be educated. They need to understand the right brain. They need to understand it better. They need to understand, one, what it sees, and two, how it responds to what it sees. Those are the two fundamental things. When you look at the brain, it has perspective, it sees, and it has responses, it has processes. So you're trying to get him to see what you see, and you're trying to get him to understand why you respond as you do. And by doing that, and at the same time, you can help him to understand that his own right brain is seeing and responding to the same things. So in seeing you, he is able to better see himself. So it's really it's valuable to him on multiple levels of his being. And you need to convince him that he can do this, and that it's natural to do it, that it's the right thing to do for him, and it's the right thing to do for culture. You need to get him, I think, enthused, give him a reason to want to do this, not just to quit fighting or not to end the struggle, but to actually see some positive, because the right brain is the positive brain. And so we want our men to see the positive aspects of the right brain. What can the right brain do for men? That you want, I mean, you know, because you're both wanting to understand you, and you want him to understand himself. And so, you know, I guess that's my answer.
Right, and also the simple little things like nurturing and paying attention to your inner guidance or your intuition. Those are things that men can do, and I think that a man that has the ability to allow those things. It's not whether or not they're there. They are there. But whether if they can allow those things to express themselves, actually elevates him in power.
Yes.
Because
I
think if you ignore as a man, if a man were to ignore or reject, you know, the capacity to nurture and compassion and those feminine qualities, that he becomes more powerful.
Yes, absolutely. It's more powerful. A team of two people are more powerful than any one person or either one of the individuals alone. So that's absolutely true. And and I'm glad you brought up feelings. I'm left brain, and I often tend to talk about feelings. Thoughts. The left brain is the thought brain, and the right brain is the feeling brain. And as a left brain male, my challenge is to make sense of my feelings. And the woman can really help a man if he'll let her to understand what's going on with his own feelings, because the feelings are our guidance system, and in fact they're our primary guidance system. You know, the right brain is the holistic brain, and it's the feeling brain, and spirit is felt, spirit feels, and we are spirit, and we need, as men, we need to understand our spiritual nature, and that comes through feeling, and we can best learn that from women.
And I certainly don't. I think that that I mean, there's nothing for me personally more. I don't know what the word to say is, but appealing is a person who is in balance. You know, I mean, a man who has the balance and has the capacity. And, you know, men have feelings too. They just, like you said, they don't know quite what to do with them. And exploring them does not take away from your masculinity. It actually enhances it.
Absolutely.
So, actually, having said that, I think we're going to go to Purple Sage now in the chat room and see what is going on there. Hello, Purple Sage.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, this is a great show.
Well, thank you. Thanks to James.
Hi, James.
Hi, thank you.
Well, I have two questions for you. And being that you come from a farming background, you've worked with your hands and your feet in the earth, you are of the earth, and you do, and do you feel that being so connected with nature helps you to live more through your right brain or your heart center?
Yes. I have not actually given that a lot of thought, and no one's ever asked me about that, but It does. The right brain is a holistic brain, and it puts everything together for us. It helps to make sense of Mother Earth and the many diverse ways she presents herself to us, and it helps us to understand Mother Earth. Of course, the left brain is involved in this too, but. I think when you think of Mother Earth as feminine, and the right brain is the feminine brain, so it just kind of makes sense that there's a special bond there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, there's really something to saying if you need to ground yourself or if you need to be grounded, just go out into nature. Because it does help you to think more clearly. And I think when you're thinking more clearly, you know, you're using both sides of your brain. But anyway, yes, I could feel that you were very close to the earth and to nature as you speak. My other question is, what are your thoughts about our human bodies becoming more androgynous as we begin to use 100% of our brains? Men are starting to be in contact or to find their feminine sides.
Well, I think a lot of men are really afraid of that, and that is somewhat of a barrier. That as long as men know that they are in control and understand that they have used their left brain their entire lives, it's directed their thinking, and they have practiced and practiced it, and they are specialists at the left brain. I think when they understand that, perhaps that will ground them, and they will understand that exploring and embracing right brain qualities is not going to radically change them. It may soften them. It's going to bring them more into who they really are, but it's not going to turn them into a woman, which is what a lot of men would be afraid of. So I think, you know, we have too much polarization. We have men that are so left brain that they are practically in a constant state of war, and there must be examples of women on the opposite end of the spectrum that just don't have a sense of detail. They don't understand the importance of the parts of reality. Perhaps they don't, and so they are malfunctioning. And so the more, as you say, androgynous we become, the more whole we become. I mean, the more whole our mind is, I suppose, the more androgynous we become. I actually never thought of that. That's a great point. I think that makes what you said makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, when you belong to a group like we do, I'm seeing that the men and women are more in touch with either the feminine and their masculine. So I guess I'm just seeing it more often because I run in a crowd, you know, in a group that is open to that. So let's hope that it spreads more.
Yes, one of the reasons I was really glad to speak to this group is I realized that the men in your audience, in our audience, are going to be receptive to this. They're probably, none of them are really afraid of right brain qualities, but I was just speaking to the greater mm-hmm. culture out there that we need to speak to and that we have to deal with in our daily lives. Most of us. Yeah.
Yep. Well, absolutely. That's why we're at war, you know. as soon as the feminine side or the right side of the brain takes over, and more people are open to it, we'll start to see peace.
Yes, we will.
Well, thank you, James.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Okay, well, so we don't have any questions from our chat room right now. Any further questions?
No, we did have a question, but you asked it, so we're good here.
Okay, all right, great. Well, we'll try to check back one more time.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Purple Sage.
Yep.
Well, we do have some callers with questions or comments, and let's see. We are going to, I guess we're going to talk to Joseph. Hello, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hello, Ariel. I feel like I've been waiting my whole life for this program, and especially to speak to you, James, because I was born androgynous and very conscious of it during my entire life. And it's not an easy path to tread, but on the other hand, I can't imagine being any other way than fully male and fully female in the same body. It's not a question of being half and half. It's full and full. I'm running into more and more young people who are asking me how I deal with my life, and it looks like I'm going to be teaching classes to some of them, which is it's sort of a treacherous area to get into, but I remember in some of my past lives, and I remember many of them, of being in this same situation. But I remember when, before we were divided into male and female, I remember, it's like Plato writes about, we were divided. We had to choose whether to be one or the other. And I think an awful lot of anger on this planet, whether conscious or unconscious, stems from that decision. And I see now that more and more people are bringing that back together, and it's a very exciting time. And I just can't tell you how much I appreciate your perspective, your intelligence, your education, your willingness to go into places where a lot of people aren't willing to go. It's very exciting. And I remember when Lavendar did my chart, and she told me, she said, you definitely are androgynous. And I've known that for a long, long time. So anyway, I feel very much at home with all the women on this show. I've met many of them personally, and We have no problems whatsoever. So I just want to thank you, and especially Lavendar, if you're listening, I really, really, really appreciate you.
Oh, she is on the line. Well, Joseph, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joseph. I'm so glad you called in. I'm almost too emotional. I'm just so pleased that I have helped someone. Thank you.
Oh, you have indeed. And I'm realizing now I'll be watching a movie or something on television, and all of a sudden I'm so tuned into the characters that I just burst into tears. I feel their sorrow. I feel their pain, and I'm saying, you know, this is a very feminine thing to be able to interact with people on that emotional level, and I'm so grateful that I have it. It makes it so much easier to function in this world.
Yeah, it's better to have to feel and think than to just feel or just think.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Well, thank you so much. I'm just truly grateful. Truly grateful.
Well, you are so welcome, Joseph, and thanks for calling.
Oh, absolutely. My love to all of you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. Well, we have another man, one of our regulars, Mr. Ralph. You are on the air.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh. Thank you very much. A very, very good program. And I really thank James for coming up and addressing some of the topics that he is, not on behalf of men, but as a man, specifically those areas dealing with the left and right brain. And I just have to tell you, I have some experience in psychology and dealing with the left-right brain phenomenon. But over the years, I've really become convinced that we really are whole-brain people. However, because we couldn't walk and talk at the same time if we weren't. However, I do believe that certain parts of the culture have specialized in emphasizing one or the other, left or right brain, whether it's male or female, by the way. I've seen some left-brain females and some right-brain males, and just in the other just opposed to those. So, but I really think that the energy that's happening right now with the planet, and this is my question to you, James, because I want to know if you agree with this, that the energy that's affecting the planet now is causing the male species or even females who are predominantly left brain operating people to shift a little bit and acknowledge their right brain and become, like you were calling, more I forgot what you called it. You have female and male together. What is that word?
Androgynous.
Androgynous. Thank
Androgynous.
You. I was wondering if you agree with that, number one. And number two, if you believe that the pressure, the absolute pressure from the religious community is kind of really holding men back from truly experiencing what they really should experience, even from a religious standpoint, the right side of the right brain and that type of response relative to their belief system and so forth and God and so forth. So could you address those?
Well, I didn't understand all of the second question. Let me deal with the first question and then let you ask the second question again.
Sure.
I agree that the energies are helping us to shift. I mean, we desperately need to, and we live in a loving universe that gives us what we need. And for sure, I've meet a lot of people that are working on this same project that I am, to try to bring us into greater balance by bringing the divine feminine onto the planet, and channeling it through and spreading it out so that people understand. So absolutely, that is happening, and I see it accelerating until we reach the shift. And your other question was about religion, but specifically about religion, what?
Yes. Well, just to surmise it, do you believe that the religious community, which is very strong internationally, is one of the last great pressure points in a negative sense for men to evolve and start to experience more right brain phenomena?
Well, I think that the religions, speaking of them in general, at their highest levels, are seeking unity with the divine feminine. They're seeking unity with God, and God includes the divine feminine, and they kind of understand the masculine side of God, but they don't understand the feminine side of God. They would like to be able to do that, I guess. I mean, that's kind of the purpose of religion, is to bring us closer to God. And the way we get closer to God is to understand this, I guess I just said. But they're ill-qualified because they're directed by men. Ideally, a religion would be directed by a woman who has a holistic perspective and a more holistic perception. But so I think the religions have a good intent, and they do some good, but I know that they also there are certain people that don't have such a good intent, and there are ways they're holding us back. The only really way that I can think that they're holding us back, I mean, that really comes to mind right now that I think even most religious people will accept, is that the religions tend to be dogmatic. They just teach a certain thing, and it's even though they're trying to unify us all in focusing on their separate religious beliefs, they're dividing us and keeping us from getting together. And by saying that our religion is the best religion, you're putting down the other religion, and you're also setting up a competition in the left brain. You're challenging the left brain of those people so when you say that my religion is better than yours, my God is better than yours, or my disciples are better than yours. So in that respect, religions are kind of keeping us apart. If they would just see that they're all brothers and sisters, if they would start going to the other, you know, once a month going to somebody else's church, you know, go to a synagogue once a month, maybe religions would start getting their act together, and I mean in a big way, and do a better job than they're doing now. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir, somewhat. I just have one little caveat here. If do you believe that perhaps the religion has been used over time with mankind as a tool to basically suppress people through this the masculine energy, suppress and hold humanity down and back, and perhaps used by the so-called powers to be or out that we're, however you want to refer to them, as a real strong tool and perhaps the strongest tool to hold us back from this experience as we're going through now, that is experiencing this increase in divine feminine energy.
Well, I agree with you. You know, you're right.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's a very good show, and hope we see more of you or hear more.
Thank
of
you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Ralph. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a definite distinction between organized religion and spirituality, where, you know, religion is a power tool, and ultimately, you know, you can say that your purpose is to bring people closer to God, but we, you know, it's like we have the only staircase. Like you said, it actually, religions tend to be separatist, and they want unity, but they have to be like everybody else has to come over here on our side for the unity. They won't go anyplace outside of their little box. So in that way, there's so much contradiction, and because religion has been literally man-made rather than woman-made, it is trying to, you know, trying to hold on to power and control, and
absolutely.
That's just, I mean, it's the antithesis of what it ought to be. We have another caller with a comment. This is Hugh. Hang on. Okay, Hugh, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Hi, Hugh.
I was listening to you speaking about the religions, and that is very true. And if you think about it, I think that religions have caused the death of more people than anything else, except for maybe the mosquito. But religions have to begin to reinvent themselves, so to speak, and get more involved with what spirituality has to offer, and that is for showing people peace and love and unconditional love is the bottom line in everything. They have to come out of these big behemoth churches that they build, which are of no use except to drain money from the community. And instead of those buildings, if that money was spent in the community helping those that truly needed help, we wouldn't be in the state that we're in today. So religions, to me, are something that should bring people together in the community so that they can interact with each other in common thought that has a bottom line of peace and love and the understanding that it's a personal relationship with God that is the bottom line that you're looking for, too. And I am actually working on a big mission and vision of bringing spirituality into global economics and combining that with unconditional love, and I'm looking to empower women wherever I can to bring in the divine feminine. I think that's the way of our future, that with the right women, they're more nurturing and they're more understanding and compassionate, so that if we get the right ones in leadership roles, they will educate us beautifully for a transition into a wonderful world. And I believe that the indigenous peoples look at the grandmothers in that way.
Well said.
Yes. I mean, you said it so well, I don't hardly know what to say to add to it.
Well, I will say a couple of things, if I may. I'll share a blog, too, just so you can get a little bit of insight about me. If you Google the word creativity, the number 777.com, that will bring it up. And on that blog is a very powerful little poem I created many years ago as a motivator in my own life. It's only three lines long. It's titled Caring, Sharing, and it reads, if you dare to care, then share. If you share, pay heed, God will reward every good deed. And if you contemplate the words of the poem, it will force you to take an action to help someone less fortunate. And when you do that, it'll put a bliss in your heart and you'll want to do more. So I have a self-taught expertise of what I term creative utilization of information on that blog. The poem is dedicated to my wife. It's in the President Ronald Reagan Library, discussed in the interview that can be downloaded from the blog as a weapon against terrorism. And currently I'm using it to help the people of Haiti who can't help themselves. So I am looking to get my way of thinking out to the masses to show that we all have unlimited creativity. We just don't realize it because we're under some kind of an authority since birth. But in our quiet moments, if we get out of our heads and into our hearts, align them with the Creator, whoever you feel that may be, and ask for divine guidance on a daily basis. And the other big key is to be in gratitude no matter what your circumstances, then your life will transition into a better way. And I toyed with the word at the beginning of this year, the word joy, and I empowered it, and it's appropriate for right now. And there's a hidden meaning in the word, which you discover by creating a word from each of the letters in the word joy. That reveals the hidden meaning, and that is Jesus optimizes you. So as we go into 2012, it's a way for people to finally get rid of all their fear and put it in the hands of where it belongs with Jesus, and just stay positive and loving and try and be a good neighbor.
Yes, and the right brain is the creative brain, and we had a question earlier about how can women get through to men. I think another thing they might do is point out that the right brain is the creative brain, and that it's going to help men be more effective creators, and that's something we all want to do. So that's another reason to learn more about the power of the right brain.
Yes, and I actually created a product in July I'm giving it to all mankind free of charge to help them with their creativity. I call it a Y-Pod, and it can be utilized on and off the grid. Off the grid, it could be as simple as an index card file of contacts and opportunities that you empower and give value to by how you interact and network with it. YPOD stands for your personal opportunity database. On the internet, it can be a website, a blog, or a social media application, and those can be portals to sophisticated computer-coded pre-qualified global business opportunities. So you bring an opportunity only into your circle of love to protect it and to make it grow and extend it out from there.
Well, it's exciting to hear about people like you doing things like that. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing, too, and God bless everyone.
Thanks so much, Hugh. Bye-bye. Well, I think it's really interesting because most weeks, most of our callers are women, and I think it's just wonderful that we've heard from three different men in our audience this evening. So that's really great.
Well, I like to talk to women, but I'm happy to hear that because men are the people I really need to be getting too, and I mean more than women, but I need to get to women in order to help them get to men. But I'm delighted that they called in, and maybe we can get a woman to call in.
Well, that could still happen.
Okay.
we have another caller coming up here in just a moment. I'm waiting for. There we go. Is this? we have someone on the switchboard that is waiting with a question, and I think our Tammy, our switchboard co-host, has got him or her in the screening room. So as soon as they come out, I will bring the next caller online. I had a question that came up when I was listening to Hugh, and it's kind of fell out of my brain. I don't know where it went. Okay, they're going to be coming out of the screening room here just any moment, and we'll bring another caller with a question for you. Okay, we have about 10 seconds here. Switchboard's acting a little slow this evening. So I think I can just jump in there. Come on, baby, let's go. Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question for James? Hello, did you have a question for James? Area 914. Hello? Okay, well, there seems to be a problem with that connection, so maybe we'll try again later. Just check back in with the chat room and see if we have any questions. Purple Sage, hello.
Hello.
We're back.
We're here. I don't have any questions from the chat room. There are so many people in here agreeing totally with what James is saying. We have men in here that are praising him because, you know, he's making them feel good about themselves. So that's a really good thing. For myself, I would like to make a comment on the religion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps James could expand on it. Religion actually started out to be a good thing, but when man took over it, you know, it became a power issue, and now it's like they hold on to their congregations through a fear-based system. If you don't go to church every Sunday, God won't love you. If you don't do this or you don't do that, God won't love you. God will punish you. And we as spiritualists know better than that, but that is the dominating factor in my view, you know, that they keep people in fear rather than in love.
Right.
They do. That's the way the left brain works. The left brain is energized by fear. The right brain, being complementary, is energized by love. It's just beautiful, the complementary nature of these two brains. And when you figure out what one does, it gives you really strong clues to what the other one does. Because they're, well, from a left brain perspective, they're opposites. One sees the fullness, the wholeness of reality, and that's love and light, and the other one looks toward the negative or the other side of reality, which is darkness and fear, and you always have these two radically different choices to draw on to solve your problem, and both of them tend to have some way of dealing with the problem and solving the problem, I think I said it earlier in the program, our first and most fundamental act of creation is the integration of these two radically different streams of information that are flowing to consciousness. We tend to think we have one perspective, but really we have these two that we integrate. And to really understand our perspective, we need to understand its components. That's pre, you know, we talked about Course 101, that's before Course 101. That's like if you understand food, you need to understand what's in it. If you understand what it's going to do to you, you want to know what ingredients are in there. And it's the same with your brain. If you're going to integrate the two brains harmoniously and use them, you need to understand how they function and how these functions are complementary. So when you do that, then you actually have options. You understand, well, my left brain is telling me this and my right brain's telling me this. Which do I want to do? Do I want to make some sort of combination solution, or do I want to go with the the fear brain, or do I want to go with the love brain? Do I want to go with the brain that has all the details, or the brain that has the big picture? That's always our choices, and then from that we integrate the two choices, and that becomes our stream of consciousness.
Yes. Yes. Well said. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Purple Sage. And we may have time yet to check back in if anyone in the chat room would have a question.
Okay. So,
but thanks for now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just had the thought, James, that in each person's life, there may be situations, events, circumstances, happenings, or whatever that would best be perceived or best be handled by a left brain approach, and there are other circumstances that would best be handled by a right brain approach. And is there ever, if you ever pick the wrong one, I'm trying to put this into words here, but the concept just hit me that do people ever have a situation where they should be looking at it with their right brain and finding the big picture, and instead they're over there with the left brain trying to dice it all up? And then there are other situations where you need to really take a look at the individual pieces of the puzzle to understand the big picture, and when you should be looking at it. You know what I mean? Would you pick, because if you have a whole brain, wouldn't you be able to apply it correctly in every situation?
Yes, that's our goal, is to use the whole brain, and the brain pretty much will work automatically for us. You know, I mean, it does. You know, we've gotten this far without, you know, learning about the two distinct hemispheres, but we can go beyond automatic, we can go beyond our programming, and we can go beyond our inherited brain dominance by choosing to use one perspective or the other. As a left brain male, my challenge is to make sure that I don't overlook the big picture, because my brain tends to automatically focus on details, and so I can consciously bring in the right brain view, and the same is true with sometimes people will see the big picture and they think they understand it, but they don't really see some of the details that can cause them problems. So, I mean, you said it yourself very well. We need both, and certain problems call for certain issues, certain ways of resolving them. An example is our political system. The answer, the key there is in the word system. The right brain is a systems brain. It takes the whole package. It's the whole process of resolving whatever issue you're trying to resolve. And with our government, what we have is a patchwork of individual ideas that have been voted into law and voted into legality and now help run the system. And what we really need to do is to look at the system as a whole first, and then figure out the details. We're trying to build government piece by piece, our government system piece by piece. We're trying to alter it piece by piece. And Buckminster Fuller said that you need to start over. You need to start with a new system. And it's clearly time that we look at the system by which we govern our country. The example of the people who were empowered to come up with a couple trillion dollars in budget cuts to keep us from further eroding our government's financial, can't think of the word, you know what I mean. It's the financial system is in trouble, and we're losing our credit and our credibility, and we need to fix it. And we know that, and we can't even fix it. We are so polarized, and that's just the system, the way we gave this process to half Republicans and half Democrats. It was a polarized group of people set in there, and they, each of these groups, were not beholden to the whole but to the people that support them. And that is not the way the government should be run. The system should be set up in some way that it can't fail, that there is no option for failure. And we're smart enough to send a man to the moon. We can figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of seeing that we need a systems approach, and that is, of course, a right brain approach. It's a holistic approach. It's non-dual. It's non-polar. And the government, the people need to see this. And if they could see this and see what the problem is, we could fix the problem. But we have to have enough people to understand what the problem is and to understand that it's a systems problem, and it's not going to get solved by making one or two changes or even a series of changes. We need to look at the whole thing, and we need to take it out of the hands of the people who benefit from it, who we somehow need to, I think we need to address our problems outside of government, and then as a unified whole, give them to the entities of government and say, you know, do this or we're getting rid of you. I mean, I don't know how else to do it.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. It's as if we have built a skyscraper with faulty parts that are not up to code, and you know all that was focused on at the time was ulterior motives and more profit and more this and more that and you know getting by. And when you've built a building with faulty parts, you know, putting a new coat of paint on it is not going to fix the problem. We have another caller here that's that has a question or comment for you, so let's move on. This is Tricia. You're on the air. Hello, Tricia.
Oh, hi. First of all, Happy New Year to you, Ariel and Lavender, and all the great work and all the other girls on the switchboard. I just wanted to quickly mention, when my daughter was a baby, there was this wonderful lady that had spoken to us in regard to the importance of babies crawling. It was referred, I don't know if you heard this point, of the cross point of your brain, and how you recognize it in a child is that if you ask them to write on the left-hand side of the page, they sometimes can't cross their hand to the left-hand side of the page and write their name. They start in the middle and write their name. And it was, because they're all growing up now in this new generation of these toys where they put babies in these little chairs that run around, they're not developing their left brain coordination, which comes from crawling. That's why you've got to go let your kids learn how to walk, to crawl, and then become standing up walking. Do you see what I'm saying? And part of her process of reteaching these children in schools was, a lot of times they they like if you see them playing tennis, they can't do a backhand. They have to use two hands to cross their body to hit the ball. And soccer is a one-sided sport. You see, you play with one foot. So her process was taking the children back to swim because you're using both parts of your body in conjunction with each other. And another one was, if you notice this with your children, was to recreate those little, you know, tunnels that you put your chairs and sheets on them and stuff and make the kids crawl through little tunnels. So they get back into learning how to crawl because they actually have jumped that space. So I just wanted to bring that up, and I can't really stay on the phone too long, but I just thought that might add something to the parents, you know. So.
Well, that's a great concept because certainly, like I said, we have to start at the very beginning and training, bringing out that balance from birth, you know, is that's the new generation will take it from there if they're balanced. So that's a good point, Tricia.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, like the jumpy, what I used to call the jumpy things that they put on the door where the kids just, you know, jump up and down. And so they're building these strengths on their legs, but that right brain thing and any parents that you'll notice it in your kids when you look at them with sports and things like that, if they are crossing. Have you heard that term before, James, the midpoint, crossing the midpoint?
I think I have. What you say makes a lot of sense to me. I remember many years ago I had someone give me an exercise to help balance my brain, and I'd forgotten all about this until you mentioned that. And the exercise was use both hands, and there's crossing involved, and the exercise was based on some research that had been done that showed that orchestra conductors, because of the way they use both hands and to direct different things, really had relatively well balanced brains, better than most people. And but I think this crawling does I can see how that would, because it affects, because the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body, and the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body. So when you're crawling and you're having to integrate the two smoothly, your side, you know, your hands and I mean your elbows and your knees as you crawl, and that's working the left and the right side in harmony.
Yeah, it's because you're using your left hand and your right foot, and then your right hand and your left foot. You see, it's like swimming when you're using them like that. But anyway, yes. I just wanted to bring that to the reference because I thought it might be kind of interesting. Because we, you know, a lot of parents take these shortcuts. You know, they stick them in those little chairs that run around the room, and you know, they're cutting out that important part of the process, you know, like learning, let the baby learn how to roll over and sit up, and, you know, that's their growth. And so anyway, you probably see it with piano players too, because they're using like left both hands, you know, the chords are on one hand and the melody's on another. So, you know, it's both sides of the brain functioning with those two hands, and even maybe sort of typing, you know, when you touch type. Because you get used to which fingers use what part of, you know. Anyway, I'll let you go, and I'm really enjoying your show. And Happy New Year to everybody, and we'll catch up later.
Okay. Tricia, thank you for calling.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Happy New Year. I'm grateful for those comments. I think that's a really good idea to let babies crawl. And I was going to say, a kid, I took piano. I took piano for many years, so that may have helped me.
That balance, yeah.
Yes, it is very balanced.
All right, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. And speaking as a piano-playing musician myself, ultimately, because reading music is kind of left-brained, because there's, you know, you have to, there's
a sequential process.
Yeah, I mean, it's a left brain thing, but then you translate that and you bring in the right brain, not only with the left and the right hand, but then there's that art, you know, the emotional part of music. So it's very much left and right brain, you know, and possibly why, you know, music is what math sounds like. And obviously math is a left brain thing and music is a right brain thing, but you put them and you put the two together and then you have the whole thing in balance, which is possibly why music is such a universal language. And this is a good segue. Lavendar has passed along to me requests that people have to hear more of my music. So, James, if you would indulge me, I have a song to play for our audience by popular request. This is called Mother Nature's Crying.
They're a big part of your world and mine in a very special way. They give so much and ask nothing in return. God gave them to Mother Nature. He said, take care of these. All they need is earth, some rain and light, and they'll become your trees. They'll fill your air with oxygen and shade you from the burning sun. They'll give you food and shelter for free. That's why Mother Nature's crying when she sees her trees are dying at the hands of man. Loving hands that need you say the highest right, believe me, when you're through. So if you live on Mother and take from her the best, you must return tenfold to her, or we'll be late. Without her trees, we'll lose the air. How can you say you don't care? 'Cause your family tree will surely be among the ones to die. That's why Mother Nature's crying when she sees her trees are dying.
that's called Mother Nature's Crying, and you can read the story behind that song if you go to Ariel's World on starseedhotline.com. I'm going to bring Tammy on. Hey, Tammy.
Hello there.
Tammy is our co-host for the switchboard, and you have a some interesting websites.
Yeah, I was on James' website today for your book. And took your brain balance. I hope I did all right on that one. I got a 7-11. But I recommend to everybody, and if you could tell everyone about your website, and it's beautiful. I love the picture on there.
Oh, thank you. Yes, the website is thewholebrainpath.com. The picture on there is a butterfly. It's a Flying Dutchman butterfly, and the significance of it is that I tried to get a pointillist filter, and my idea was that the left brain would be represented by the dots of color, and the whole brain would be represented, the whole brain perspective would be represented by the brain that puts all of the dots of color together and sees that it's a butterfly feeding on a yellow flower, and it's not very clear, and I made it that way on purpose because the right brain has to do a little bit of work to get all the details to understand what's going on. And so you sometimes kind of need to look at the picture closely and figure out that the butterfly is actually feeding on a yellow flower. And so, but anyway, yes, the website has a section of reviews. You can learn a lot about the book itself just by reading the reviews, and I've really been blessed with great reviews. It's been I just really appreciate that. It's been as an artist and having spent many years writing this book, it feels really good to have people understand what I've done and to appreciate it. There's also some other radio interviews on there, and you should be able to listen to this radio interview again, or if you have friends that missed it. Of course, you probably have ways of going through the Starseed site, but it'll also be on my site. That's basically the site. There's a press section, and it was fun putting it together. I like doing artistic things, especially working with graphics.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just beautiful. And I wanted to ask you, of all the different modalities that's out there for balancing the brain, is there one in particular that you recommend?
Well, I guess that would be meditation. That's the tried and true method. I've never met anyone who meditated that regretted meditating. I've never heard anybody say they had any real problems from meditation other than getting into it. I mean, I know it's not always easy, and in fact, it can be very difficult, and it's especially difficult if you try to do it, for example, right after you get home from work or something like that. You might have the time, but you just don't feel like it. So another tool that I suggest is listening to music without lyrics. The lyrics engage the left brain. The right brain is engaged by the music. And so it tends to pull you into the right brain. It's a really, really good, powerful tool to get you into the right brain. At least temporarily, and then do that, and then try to meditate. And I think that will soothe the transition if you're having a difficult time. There's another little exercise that's very simple that you can do at any time, any place. and that is to imagine an infinity symbol right in front of your the between your eyebrows, and so you imagine you raise your eyes, you look up, and then you go down and you go around and back down and across, and you do an infinity symbol. You use your eyes and follow it, and you try to get it smooth and perfect, just like you'd like to have it. When you first start doing that, you might find it's a little rough. One part of the infinity is more difficult to traverse smoothly than another, and then you can also reverse that. And try doing it reverse, and so that's another little tool that is supposed to be good at synchronizing the hemispheres. But to me, the most important thing is to understand your mental choices, because the brain is somewhat automatic. And so, for example, if you get yourself into your right brain, and you say, okay, I'm in my right brain. You say you're a left brain person, so you're not automatically in the right brain, but you get over into the right brain. Well, if you ask a left brain question, your left brain is going to answer that question. That's what it's designed to do, and that's what it's going to do. So rather than working at the level of the brain, I suggest, or in addition to any physical exercises, I suggest you think about the mind. The brain, there are three energy systems. There's the physical energy system, there's the mental or mind energy system, and there's the spiritual energy system that's in charge of all of those. Spirit creates, has created our physical world, and it creates it through the energy of mind. And mind is the brain is just our physical connection to mind, and mind is everywhere, and mind connects us, and we can understand, and we can even talk to somebody on the other side of the planet sometimes more easily than we can talk to the person across the table from us, just because of mind synchronization and understanding, and just because mind is instantaneous and everywhere. So and mind is under our control. We can't, well, I'm not sure how much we can change our spirit. Certainly we can make changes to the way we react with spirit, and we can't change our physical world, but we can control mind. We can think whatever we want to think. We can not think if we have that skill. We can do that by going into meditation. And mind is really our arena of absolute power. And so what you can always do is you can choose your perspective. If you're left brain and you know you're focused and you know that you're separatist and you know that you use aggression to solve your problems, you can say, I choose the right brain way. And you can look at the context instead of the detail. You can use compassion instead of aggression to try to solve your problems. You can use unity instead of separation. And, separation works. You can if you have problem people, you can separate them by putting them in prison. You can separate them from their life. You can get away from them. You can move away from your problems. That's a tool of separation. That's a left brain solution. But you can also choose right brain solutions. And your brain is not going to get in the way. If you say, I want the context, I want to use compassion, then your right brain is going to say, yay, let's do it. And so that's where you have your freedom. And that's where you have absolute power, at the level of mind. And perspective is mind. That's it's non-physical, and it's not spiritual. It's mind. And so that's my solution. Work at you know, do the physical exercises. Anything people want, anything that draws you, anything that your mind suggests, you know, try it. But don't forget that that perspective is totally under your control all the time. You just have to remember it. I mean, if you're left brain dominant, you know, you're on automatic. You tend to choose left brain solutions, but and you have to remember, well, I've got an option to this. But that's to me, that's the biggest challenge, remembering that that you have this other option, that you have, you always have two options, and you don't have to do the one that comes automatic.
Great. So our will and our intention are our greatest tools for this shift.
They are.
No doubt.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, James, it has been a pleasure having you with us this evening. And one more time, I will remind everyone, your website is thewholebrainpath.com and your book, The Whole Brain Path to Peace. Thank you so much, James, from Lavendar and Tammy and Purple Sage and Sierra, who's not with us tonight. We do thank you. And
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Lavendar, good night. Tammy, Purple Sage, and Sierra, I hope you feel better soon. And we will all see you next week. Lavendar, do you have an announcement for next week?
Yes, I'd like to say a shout-out to Belva. She's on the mend. She's doing much, much better for those that have been following along with Belva's accident that she had. She's doing remarkable, so I just wanted to put that out. And next, we have a change in our schedule. Kathleen McGowan was going to be on January 10th, but now it's going to be next Tuesday, January the 3rd. Kathleen McGowan, of course, wrote The Expected One, and we are also going to have our friend Catherine Brinkley to be on with Kathleen. So I just wanted everybody to put on their calendars that we have Kathleen McGowan next Tuesday.
Okay, great. Well, once again, James Olson, thank you so much for being with us.
Again, I'm just delighted to be here.
And everyone, have a happy new year, and we will see y'all next year every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're here, and we'll be back next week with Kathleen McGowan. Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.